This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, Episode 1 for April 7th, 2006. Hello, open sourcers, wherever you are. Leo Laporte here, announcing a brand new podcast, new part of the Twit.tv family. One I've wanted to do for a long time, and in fact, if I hadn't erased all the recordings we did, we would have done a long time ago. Let me introduce your host for this podcast, Mr. Chris DeBona.
Hello, everybody.
An old friend. Chris used to be a regular on the Screensavers talking about open source. That's back when you were at OSDN, I think, right?
Yeah, I was still at Slashdot then, and then I was running the game company. And,
yeah, what happened to the game company?
It cratered. I think the technical term is cratered. yeah, no, it didn't do so hot. We ran out of money, and everyone had to go find new jobs.
It was a big, massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
Yep, or it would have been.
How far did you get?
The code was in good shape. It was mostly a matter of, you know, we probably had another year's worth of coding to go and art and all the rest.
It's expensive, especially once
it's really expensive.
You bring in artists and you start doing, you know, the engine's one thing, but then you have to create a game.
Yeah, exactly. And then market it and then get it out there. And
it's millions, yeah.
It's a lot of money.
So where's the code now? Is it just lying?
I have a server at home and it's just sort of sitting there and I've got it mirrored and...
Yeah. Is it in a state where you might want to open source it, or is it not that far along?
No, it's just not far enough along. Yeah. I mean, most of the stuff that matters is this message passing stuff, which is very specific to a game environment, right?
Right.
And so it's not even very useful for people who aren't writing that kind of thing. And frankly, let's get real, the state of the art's kind of moved since then.
You know, like 1 year, 2 years later. But so now Chris has actually a plum gig. You want to describe what you do now?
Well, sure. So I work for Google as their open source programs manager, which means that I have sort of an oversight role, making sure that we don't break licenses. But I also have a role of sort of open source outreach for the company, making sure that these people whose software we use and us are our pals, basically.
Does Google use a lot of open source?
Well, we use a lot of the Linux kernel. And
all your servers are running Linux.
That's right.
A special kind of Google-fied Linux.
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, it's the Linux kernel, and then we've got sort of a distribution on top of that. And, we've got almost 6-7 servers now. So,
wait a minute, not individual servers. You mean server platforms.
No, I mean actual servers.
All you have, 6 or 7?
Yeah, just 6 of them. And this is like my running bad joke. We upgraded to 7.
Yeah, we got 7 servers.
7 servers.
I don't think Kevin Rose even has just 7 servers for Dig.
Well, you mean for Dig? Yeah. No, I think he's running that on a PDA.
And, it's amazing. And there's a guy named Jason who lives in Armonk who actually is running the entire internet.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
cool. He's got the root server there. It's running on an old 386 box.
Only a couple people use that nowadays. That internet thing, it's just like CB radio.
Does anybody...
I say as I wear a headphone and talking to a microphone, right?
Yeah, right. Over channel 9.
Channel 9, everybody.
Do you actually even know how many servers Google has?
I do, but that's not the kind of thing we actually talk about.
Oh, really? You're not supposed to say.
We have this page. It's the allowed metrics page. And one of them is that we eat, I think, 400 pounds of cereal over a week. And,
18 cases of Mountain Dew a day.
Actually, once they stacked up all the water that we drink, the water bottles that we drink in a week, so people would get an idea and start using the faucets. And I was like, holy crow.
I don't know that. Mountain View water. I don't know. I think it's probably...
Well, we have these like UV distiller things.
Oh, you should definitely be using those. Yeah.
Yeah, I say as I drink from the crystal geyser of water here.
So Google uses a lot of open source.
Yeah, we do. We use a lot of Linux. We use a lot of languages, too. So one of the things I think that open source isn't really... People don't talk about this as much, but we use a lot of C++ and a lot of Python.
I know there's a lot of Python development. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Guido Venerossum even works here. He's the creator of Python.
Guido works at Google?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
We got to get him on the show. How's his English?
Oh, it's fantastic. He's Dutch, so he's very well.
I know. I shouldn't even. That's so parochial of me. Ask me how my Dutch is, and it'll be fair now.
Yeah, how's your Dutch?
Terrible. I'd love to talk to Guido. I mean, he's one of my personal heroes. But that's what we're going to be doing on this show, isn't it? I mean,
well, I don't want to make this just like Googlers on the internet, you know. But, you know, yeah, for sure.
The guy who wrote Python, I mean, it doesn't matter that he works for Google. He's down the hall. Ben Goodger will join us next week. He's one of the Firefox leads. That'll be fun.
Yep.
I know you have many friends in the open source community, too, and I hope you'll bring him by.
Yeah, my wife likes to say I'm hired for my Rolodex. So,
well, that's probably true.
I don't have any individual skills anymore. I can call.
I know I hired you for your Rolodex, except, of course, I'm not paying you anything. But
yeah, so hired usually includes money, Leo. I know you've been involved in media for a while, so I should probably let you know that.
You know what Dvorak says about this? He says a business model will emerge.
Yeah, and that Apple will be running Windows. And
yeah, well, he says some other things that we don't perhaps believe, but I'm trusting him that a business model will emerge.
You know, it's funny, leading up to this, I listened to some of the Twitcasts, I guess you call them, for the last, you know, weeks, months, whatever. And I heard this, like, it was like you had a lot of people on. You had, like, John Dvorak and a couple of others, you know?
Yeah, we do probably 6 or 7 people at once, yeah.
And everyone was at a conference.
Right.
You know, and right. I thought it was funny because so this is actually the first time I have not been into Linux World since Linux World started.
Is it going on? When's it going?
Yeah, it's in Boston.
Today, and you didn't go?
So, yeah. What's that?
How come you didn't go?
I went the last 10 times and, right. You know, I had a lot of things I wanted to get done here. So.
I think I went to, if not the first or second or third Linux World. It was very tiny.
Yeah, back when it was still in San Jose.
It was in San Jose, and it was really small, and it was really cool. And I'm sure now it's a big conference, right?
Well, it's mostly a business conference now, too. Back then, they still had some people who were sort of, you know, long-haired hippies and stuff, you know, like myself. And
you're still a long-haired hippie,
I still have long hair. I keep on threatening my wife to cut it off. And she's like, well, you have to give me a certain amount of warning.
Yeah, she's got to gear up.
Yeah, and that kind of like planning ahead.
No, that's not really funny. No, you should just shave your head one day and scare the hell out of her.
Well, you know, there's a guy here, this friend of mine, Dan, and he his picture on the online internet, the online interweb, whatever, his picture, he's got this like enormous, like, you know, pasty white guy afro. I mean that in the nicest way. I don't mean it like in a bad way, but it's huge, you know. And then like he shaved his head one day and everyone was just like, you know, you're shell shocked.
Who
like,
is
are you
this?
Okay,
you what know? Is this skull? Yeah, do you have cancer? Well, yeah. If you want to know how what a good looking,
you have cancer, that's funny.
That's a good joke, isn't it? What a long-haired guy, a good-looking guy Chris DeBona is. Look at the album art. Lori LeBeau Walsh did us a wonderful job, and he's got a tux on one. Tux is an angel, and the BSD demon on the other shoulder.
Oh, so you ended up using that image. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. And we did get permission from which is Marshall McKirk, who did the BSD demon, which is weird. I mean, here you are in this open source community, and this guy has the rights to the demon, and you have to actually ask him permission, but he's very kind. He said, as long as you do some BSD stuff.
Oh, sure.
Of course we're going to do some BSD stuff.
We can talk about some BSD things that happened this last week.
Well, let's do it. That way, Marshall will feel good about this.
Well, maybe not about this one. But so first of all, I love FreeBSD.
I do, too. And anybody
this
who
is
uses,
not about that. This
anybody
is
who uses
BSD.
A Mac is using BSD. So,
that's true. You know. That's true. We all owe BSD a great debt of gratitude in the computer business. So this week, Theo DeRat, who runs OpenBSD, put out a call for donations. And it was fairly vociferous, which, if you know Theo, is completely consistent. And so that happened this week, asking for basically money to help host the ISOs for that distribution.
Well, that
OpenBSD is a very secure distribution. Yeah.
And that is, of course, the real cost, you know, is bandwidth. So because people are downloading it. I think that's a reasonable thing. Was it a controversial thing to ask for money?
Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. It depends on how you frame it, right? If it's just, hey, we need some money to help with our hosting bill, people do it all the time. And it's sort of okay. And in fact, they're like the Oregon Open Source Lab, they have an entire hosting infrastructure for that kind of thing. So you don't even have to ask for money. You just say, hey, can we put some files on your servers? They say, sure, and it's all good, right? But one of the things that's kind of tricky with OpenBSD is since they do have a lot of cryptography in the product, in the distribution, they are not comfortable doing any development in the United States.
B- Because of the draconian anti-crypto laws here.
Well, they're kind of weird, our crypto laws, because basically now what happens, people basically download the stuff from international websites and use it.
Right.
So it's like, well, so I guess we kept it from being exported, you know.
Right. Yeah. We import. We're a big importer. We've gone from being an exporter.
Yeah, we're a net importer of crypto. But, the balance of trade. But, but because of that, like, since most of the free hosting is here in the United States, it's hard for them to take advantage of those things.
I see. So. Well, that's reasonable then. But was it controversial that he asked for money? Were people saying don't ask for money? Or?
I think the right way to say it is that Theo himself can be a bit controversial.
Uh-huh. He's like a lightning rod for this stuff.
That's exactly the right words. So when he asked, people are like, well, is it going to you? Is it going to a nonprofit? Because there's no nonprofit around OpenBSD. All the money flows through him. And people are like, well, how do we know it's going to get there? I mean, not that you shouldn't trust him. It's just one of those weird things, you know.
One of the things that's going to be very fun about this show is the characters that are in the open source movement. People like Theo Durrett, people like Richard Stallman and Eric Raymond. I mean, there are just some fascinating characters. Larry Wall is quite a character.
He's zany.
Yeah. So I think we're really talking to some of the brightest, most interesting people in the business.
Not including us, of course.
We're just the wallpaper behind them, the background.
Yes.
So this is going to be fun. I'm really pleased that you were willing to do this. I once again apologize for erasing the first two shows.
Apologize. Come on. This is the first thing they teach you in public speaking. Is stop apologizing.
I have to explain to people that it's Bill Gates' fault. My mistake is producing an open source podcast on Windows. And so we had two great interviews with Jeremy from the Samba project and Ben Goodger from Firefox, who's kindly consented to do it over. And we had them all taped, and they were great. And I had them on a Windows box for editing, and I pushed the wrong button in Windows Media Player, I guess, and it erased all of the audio on that computer, including those two fascinating interviews that'll be forever lost. But the good news is
our history, our shared history, lost.
The good news is it was only two shows, and I know we're going to get both Jeremy and Ben back. So thank you, and we look forward to this weekly. It's going to be called Floss Weekly. Do you want to explain what Floss means?
Okay, so one of the ways that people talk about open source software is they use an acronym, and sometimes it's OSS for open source software, or FOSS, or free or open source software, and sometimes people say Floss because it's even more annoying. Because it's free, libre, Spanish for free, open source software.
And so, I guess the idea was that the word libre in Spanish is really a better description of what free means in this context.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people think this is about money, and in fact, it's not. It's about the freedom to do with the software what you please.
It's not gratis. It's free. Yes. It's free as in free as the wind. Free.
Yeah, although it is worth saying that the open source definition is pretty clear that you cannot charge per se for the software. You know, even though you can charge for services around it, for delivering it, and putting on a CD or something.
One of the things that I've started to realize, we're in a kind of interesting era now where people are giving a lot of stuff away, and they're not worrying so much about how they're going to make money. I mean, podcasts is a good example. A lot of what you see on the web now, open source software really started all this. And I think it's fantastic because people are, in fact, able to make a living by giving stuff away. And it's a whole new world thing. And I think we can thank people like Richard Stallman and the open source community for saying, you know, you don't have to be greedy, and you can still make make dinner and live.
Well, I think also, I mean, it's reflective of, you know, sometimes, like, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I mean in a very good way, things just aren't that hard after you've done it once. Uh-huh. So, like, once you've written something once, you don't need to write it again.
Right.
You just use it again.
Right. And coders work, right?
Well, it's how good everything works, really. It's like, if you think about it, a blogger is not going to write the same thing over and over and over again unless they're a blowhard or something. Right?
So. there's a few, but we won't name names.
But the popular ones are the people who can continue to be creative and engaged.
That's right.
And I think the past value of these things are interesting and all that stuff. But, you know, if you can do new things all the time, isn't that better?
Yes.
And I think that's sort of like intrinsic within the open source process. You know, we can always build on something better, you know? than we can by starting from scratch. I mean, people don't even think, you know, people don't think, oh, I have to set up a dam in my backyard to power my chip plant, to build my computer, to write my operating system, to run write my web browser, to get on the internet. It's like, it's okay to use things that happened before.
I've often thought that if some massive electromagnetic pulse, zapped all the electronics on the earth, we would just throw up our hands and say, forget it, we're not doing this again.
That's crazy.
it developed organically.
We'd rather starve than do the work.
We're not going to start over. But now that we have it, what an amazing, amazing creation. I mean, I think in many ways, mankind's greatest creation. And we're living it.
Yeah.
So, and open source is in many ways the peak of that. So I'm looking forward to
it. It is worth pointing out, however, if you go back just 100 years, how far we've come.
Oh,
and that was
while
discovering the technology along the way.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know, so.
I mean, this century's been, last 100 years has been amazing.
Yep.
And I kind of agree with people like Ray Kurzweil who say, the next 10 years, you're going to see as much development as you saw in the last 100. And it's exponential, and it's going to change rapidly. So,
yeah, actually, I really enjoy that book. He came by here and spoke, and
which of his books? The Singularity.
Singularity is new. Yeah. Well, all of his books are great. But,
well, let's get Ray on the show too. I mean, it's not exactly open source, but I think Ray is
pull
brilliant.
That off. I know his person there. So.
Good. Would you?
I'll talk to his people.
Talk to his people.
I'm sure he'd love to talk.
I can never have him on Twit because Dvorak is very dismissive of everything Kurzweil says. But
I think he's dismissive of a lot of things.
I think that's Dvorak. But I thought the Singularity was fascinating.
Yeah.
And I can't. It's hard to disprove the things he says. I think we are close to that time when machines are as smart as humans and can design themselves. And once that happens, stand back.
10 to the 18th processors, that's all you need.
Stand back. Chris DeBona, I can tell already we're going to have a great time every week. It looks like, I think we're going to release this every Friday afternoon to give you something to listen to on your commute home and your weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So at twit.tv is the place to go on the web to find out more about Floss Weekly. And, of course, we will be on all the usual places like iTunes and Odeo and MyYahoo. So. Please join us every week. Next week, Ben's going to do the show. Ben Goodger?
Most likely. I have to calendar him.
Okay. Yeah. Calendar Ben. But since you have control of his calendar, you can do that, can't you?
No one controls anyone's calendar, per se. But we'll work it out.
Okay. And,
he's a good fellow.
And I'd love to do Guido sometime and just anybody you can think of, Ray Kurzweil. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I think so, too.
Thanks, Chris. We'll see you next Friday.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
For another Floss Weekly.